Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
For the Giants, it really does seem like their best bet is to wait to see what wide receivers are available to them at number six, and then take whoever's the best on their board. You could make an argument, assuming all three are there, that Harrison, Odunze, and Neighbors are all, you know, potentially the best wide receiver in the draft. So it's kind of, you almost feel like you can't miss in that scenario. And that's much better than sacrificing a ton of money and a ton of assets on what would otherwise be a gamble.
Welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us for an off-season edition of the Giants Wire podcast. Ryan O'Leary here playing host, joined as always by my good friend Dan Benton, the managing editor of USA Today's Giants Wire. We're coming at you here on a Thursday, April 4th. Dan, how are you feeling about your football team now? What are we, less than a month away from the draft? How are you feeling?
Yeah, it's kind of remarkable to think that we're this close to the draft already. The offseason is flying by. Started hot. Free agency kind of slowed down a little bit, but there were some big splashes made, some interesting moves that have transpired over the last several weeks that have Giants Nation buzzing a little bit, some good, some bad. But, you know, it's certainly been interesting. I'll give it that. I don't know that much of it has been entirely unexpected, but, it is still odd to see some of the moves that happened. And obviously we'll get into those here in a minute.
Yeah, there was a lot that happened in the offseason. I'm sure Giants fans feel a certain way about some of the moves that were made. I mean, Brian Burns, definitely want to talk about that. Love the player, but I have to wonder about what the plan is to help the offense too, Dan. So we got takes on that here coming up. Just a quick note before we dive in here that the Giants Wire podcast, you can subscribe on whatever platform you like best. Rate, review, subscribe. That's how you can support us. We appreciate your support. And especially in the offseason when our shows come up kind of randomly, not like every week like we do during the season, subscribing is the best way to keep in touch with us, keep up to date with our content. And again, we appreciate the hell out of you. Thank you. I need to check in with the great Danton. I need you to put that hat on, Dan, because I pulled up the Giants Wire site on Wednesday just to see what was going on. And some of the first headlines staring at me right in the face were draft related. Giants land Malik Neighbors, Max Melton, and Field Yates' 2-round mock. Giants trade up for quarterback Drake May and latest Lance Zierlein mock. Giants land Marvin Harrison Jr., and latest mock draft from CBS Sports. I could go on, Dan, but the consensus is nobody has any freaking clue what the Giants are going to do. I think that is true most years with the draft nicks out there, right? Like, nobody has any clue, and it's fun to try to predict it. But I think, especially this year, with the Giants at number six, as we speak here again on April 4th, aren't the Giants one of the most interesting? I think between the Giants and the Patriots, two teams that could stay put, draft a quarterback, draft a receiver, you know, trade back. Like, there's all kinds of different avenues, directions the Giants could go. I think the Giants at six and the Patriots at three are two of the most interesting teams in this draft because nobody knows what the hell they're going to do here. Put the hat on. Put the great Danton hat on. Do you have any idea? What are you hearing? What have you read that is like made you feel a certain way? You know what I mean? Like, what are the Giants going to do at number six? Because there is clearly no consensus when you look at the mock drafts.
Oh, no. Oh, well, the Giants, to their credit, have done an excellent job of preventing any kind of actual leaks. Like, the things that have been out there are intentionally out there. Either that or they're untrue. That's just the reality of that. I think, you know, from an outside perspective, having no firsthand knowledge, again, because they've done such a good job of keeping things, you know, relatively in-house, it's clear that there is no smokescreen when it comes to their due diligence and interest in the quarterback prospects. But given their position at number six, the likelihood of them landing one of those top four guys at this point, because we've moved into an area now where we're talking about top four instead of top three. I don't know that they're going to necessarily have a legitimate shot at any of those guys without trading up. And while I do think that a trade up is possible, I don't really view it as more likely than maybe a trade down or just staying at six where they could land. Again, if one of those guys slipped to number six, then, you know, wonderful. If they happen to like that particular player, just because they're scouting a player doesn't mean they actually like that particular player. I think that's a very important distinction that fans need to make, is that the Giants historically, and this is true under Joe Shane and Brian Daboll as well, they put every bit as much effort and time into a player that they want to cross off their list as they want to be on their final big board. So I think it's important to keep that in mind. So if I were a wagering man, and again, as you guys know, I'm not that, a trade up is possible, but I would put heavier odds on a trade down, and even heavier odds than that on just staying put. And at that point, you're looking at, does the quarterback that they like slip to number six? And if not, basically you're at, well, which stud wide receiver are they going to take? There are some outside opportunities, some outside chances that maybe they take a tight end, a Brock Bowers, or, you know, maybe they go with Joe Alt, who I don't necessarily believe is a fit for the Giants. Specifically, not to say he's not a great talent, I just don't know that he fits with the Giants specifically. And then to an even lesser likely degree, there's that far outside dark horse chance that they actually invest in the top defensive player, whoever they have rated as the highest defensive player, because they'll have their pick of the litter at number six if that's the route that they want to go, whether it be a cornerback or another edge rusher or something like that. They will be able to grab the top defensive player if that's what they want to do. So I wouldn't necessarily rule that out, but, you know, when push comes to shove, I couldn't tell you which way I think they're going to go, because there are any number of different directions, and all of them, depending on what happens over the first five picks in front of them, could potentially be viewed as realistic scenarios.
For me, it's like, obviously the big offseason move that moved the needle was the trade for Brian Burns. And I think we'll get into that one a little bit here coming up. I want to get your feelings specifically on that move, Dan, which, just in a, you know, just a little precursor to that discussion later, I can't rip that move. Brian Burns is a stud. So I love it. But in terms of this draft, I feel like we saw that makes some moves on the defensive side. I don't know, as a fan, like, if they used number six overall to draft the best defensive player on the board, I would get it. It's probably a great long-term move, but, like, we got to score some points. You know what I mean? Like, that's, I'm just so sick of the Giants not scoring points, you know, not getting it done on offense. And I feel like they addressed defense. We've talked about the pass rush a lot. You have Kayvon Thibodeau. Now you have Brian Burns as well. Like, this is, you still have, you know, Dexter Lawrence. Like, this is going to be a really nasty pass rush for the Giants. It should be, at least. So you address that. Meanwhile, Saquon Barkley is now an Eagle, which, again, that's another thing we'll get to, Dan. Hold your thoughts on that. You know, we got to make some moves on offense. I love Darius Slayton. Love Wandale Robinson. But we need a receiver, right? And I don't know. I just feel like, in this draft, if they come away with a defensive player, or even if they come away with a quarterback in round one, it's like, if you draft J.J. McCarthy number six, I don't think he's starting over Daniel Jones in year one. I think J.J. McCarthy is a player that would really benefit from sitting at least a year. Like, yeah, he's going to sit for a year behind Daniel Jones. Then the offense is going to suffer a little bit because of that, because we just use a first-round pick on a player who's not going to play in 2025. You know what I mean? So in terms of this draft, I've kind of landed on what I want, and I want a stud. You know, I want a stud receiver. You brought up Bowers there, the tight end from Georgia. Trading back and getting Bowers, I would be all in on that. I love that move, especially with Darren Waller. Like, get the hell out of here. You know what I mean? Go retire. I just think quarterback would be underwhelming because you're not getting the top guys at six. Trading up in a year where you only have six draft picks anyway is a little rough. Drafting a tackle like Joe Alt, like you said, Dan, would feel like you're giving up on Evan Neal. And I just don't know. They're probably close to doing that anyway, but I'm not sure I'd be super excited about that either. You know what I mean? Like, just let's try one more year with Evan Neal and hope we don't have to just completely throw in the towel there. So the move with Brian Burns, long way of saying, kind of makes me feel like we have to address offense now, and we have to go get Neighbors or Harrison Jr. or the Adunze kid from Washington. One of these got Bowers. I need a difference-making stud skill position player, please. You know, that's where I'm at heading into this draft. That's what I want. And it would make all the sense in the world if the Giants do that. They might pull the rug out from under us, Dan, but that's what I'm hoping for right now as we speak on April 4th.
Yeah, well, I mean, I know a lot of people have tunnel vision on the whole quarterback thing, but you got to put things in perspective. Do the Giants need a long-term quarterback? Listen, everybody knows my feelings on Daniel Jones, but the reality is that he has suffered some major injuries, and they're concerning. There's no other way around that reality. You go into each season at this point believing that you're going to need to play a backup quarterback at some point or another, and that kind of sets in motion the notion that you got to find a new franchise guy. So I do understand that, but if they remain at six, you know, it's an entirely possible that by the time they come up to step up to the podium, that they're going to have to choose, you know, quarterback number five, quarterback number six. And at that point, do you really want to invest that pick into that? And I don't think that's the case. Additionally, and we talked about this off air, I don't think a trade up or a quarterback is necessarily the best idea, because this is a team that is devoid of talent at almost every single position, certainly depth at every single position. There's a lot of roster building that still needs to take place. And how much money do you want to invest in the quarterback position next year? How many draft assets do you want to give up in order to move up to take a guy? Do you really want to move up, you know, and take a guy like Drake May, who's wildly inconsistent? I don't think that would necessarily be the best decision. Again, you know, we look at the draft chart and take pick one, two, and three to move up based solely on the draft chart. But in reality, you're going to have to be giving up more than that, especially given the competition that you're likely to face from Denver, from Minnesota. So you're talking about to move up three spots. They're going to have to trade picks one, two, and three this year, a one next year, potentially even more than that. So how much do you really want to sacrifice for a quarterback who's not the best quarterback, you know, in terms of consensus in the draft, not even the second best quarterback in terms of consensus in the draft? And then, you know, you'd have to make your pick between, you know, May, who again is, you know, seemingly wildly inconsistent, or Daniels if he falls. I don't necessarily think that's going to be the case. Neither. Or, you know, J.J. McCarthy, who's obviously as hot as anybody right now, but as you said, would probably benefit from sitting out a year. So I just I don't see the benefit in the Giants doing that. And I know there are not a lot of fans that would agree with that, because they're just stuck on, we need to move on from Daniel Jones. But if they did that, you're still stuck with Daniel Jones next year. That's just how it's going to be. He's going to be the starting quarterback if he's healthy next year. It doesn't matter how much they invest in a move up or in a quarterback, or how much they spend in that quarterback room. And again, you spend that amount of money and then you kind of limit yourself in terms of your other roster flexibility or other personnel flexibility, because you're piling this astronomical amount of money into the quarterback position. So, you know, from a pure roster building standpoint, the best course of action for the Giants right now would probably be to stand pat or trade back, as you said, and grab the top available receiver at, you know, either six or wherever you move back to. And that includes the potential tight end if that's what ends up happening. But, for the Giants, it really does seem like their best bet is to wait to see what wide receivers are available to them at number six, and then take whoever's the best on their board. You could make an argument, assuming all three are there, that Harrison, Odunze, and Neighbors are all, you know, potentially the best wide receiver in the draft. So it's kind of, you almost feel like you can't miss in that scenario. And that's much better than sacrificing a ton of money and a ton of assets on what would otherwise be a gamble.
No, yeah, I mean, can you imagine Harrison Jr. at six? You know what I mean? Like, that would be.
Truth be told, I don't know that I would. I would take him if Neighbors is there. Yeah.
Yeah. I like Neighbors too. I think, you know, the trade up is fascinating. I think I would be pretty upset if the Giants moved up. Let's say they move up to number three and draft J.J. McCarthy or Drake May. I'd be upset as a Giants fan in that scenario. I don't agree with that line of thinking. You're moving up. First of all, you're not helping your roster in 2025 because Daniel Jones is going to start. I agree 100% with that, Dan. And you're taking this huge gamble on a player who we don't know. We just don't know how McCarthy and May, these are not slam dunk quarterbacks. Teams are going to get silly drafting them and make some great. We're going to see some wild moves on draft day. Will the Giants be that team? I don't know. But, you know, unless it gets like a, unless like a, unless Jaden Daniels would happen to slide to number three, Dan, then I think it's a different story, right?
Yep. Different story.
Different story. Absolutely. But I don't, we're not expecting that, right? I think it's Caleb Williams one, Jaden Daniels two. I think that's pretty much the consensus at this point. After that, there's no consensus. Some people love Drake May. Some people love McCarthy. You know, it's all over the place. It's going to be split.
Some people love Michael Penix.
Yeah, some people love Penix. Some people hate Penix, right? And that's another question, right? Like, the Giants could stay at six, draft a freaking stud, a cornerstone piece, defense, wide receiver. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to have, because of the craziness that's going to happen with the quarterbacks here, they're, like you said, Dan, they're going to have their pick of a stud. So they could take a Malik Nabers. And then I know I can turn on ESPN, Dan. They're going to tell me that six or seven quarterbacks are going in the first round. But I feel like a lot of that is just like draft hype. You know, usually one of these guys slips and falls through. And who will it be? One of these guys that nobody thinks is going to slip will actually slip. Could Penix be that? Could a Michael Penix be there on day two, right? Because he's a guy that's all over the place, right? People say no way he gets out. He's going to be picked in the top 20. Other people say no, the Vikings at number 23, they're going to get Penix. And other people say, oh, no, he's a second round pick. You know what I mean? It's all over the place with a guy like Michael Penix, who, if you watch the national semifinal game against Texas, it was like, wow, this guy can play. He's lefty and it's different, right? The ball looks different coming out of his hand, but it also, like, you could argue he throws the best ball out of all these guys. And he's a really interesting player. I know there's concerns about his health and, you know, the shoulders and the knees in college, and he's an older player and all that, but like, Penix feels like a guy that could come, he could play it right away and be pretty good. I don't think he's a guy that has to sit. So could the Giants grab a stud on day one? And if they like Penix and he's still there early on in the second round there, when they pick, what did they pick in the 40s, right? Overall.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Penix with that second pick, it'd be hard to pass up on that. And now you have Daniel Jones and you have a potential succession plan in Penix that Daboll can work with. Like, that seems like a kind of a slam dunk right there. Like, I'd be all in on that kind of move. Getting a quarterback later in the draft, I think I would be in on that kind of plan. That's what I'm talking myself into here.
You know, that would certainly be the ideal scenario, at least in my opinion, that they get their stud wide receiver in round one and then somehow land, a Michael Penix in round two. I don't necessarily think he's going to be there when the Giants come up to pick. I don't know that he's going to fall out of the first round, given, you know, the newfound hype that there is. He had a great pro day. So, you know, those things matter. You know, it's tough to evaluate quarterbacks. You hear people like Chris Sims and Kurt Warner and those guys saying it all the time. Like, the college game is so vastly different than the pro game. And the way that those offensive systems are set up don't really mimic or mirror what happens in the NFL. So it is kind of a crapshoot. So there is always that risk involved there. But if, you know, he were to fall to round two and the Giants were able to get that top wide receiver and still get their quarterback, I don't know that there's a big enough gap between a Drake May and a Michael Penix that you really feel hurt you didn't get a Drake May, you know, in that scenario. So if that's how things played out, I think that's something that Giants fans should be happy about if things go down that way. I think that would be an ideal scenario. And again, Daniel Jones is still going to start. So it would give a Penix or whoever an opportunity to learn the system for a year. And I don't want to say that the clock would be reset on Joe Shane and Brian Daboll, but John Mara certainly made it sound like they're going to get at least, you know, possibly 2 years. I don't think that if they don't succeed this coming season that he's going to blow things completely out of the water again. So it would give an opportunity for that quarterback to learn the system and then come in the next season. And again, the clock is not necessarily reset at that point. But, you know, they would come in with a year of experience in the system and in the practice. And whoever it is, obviously, maybe they don't, you know, maybe they don't come in if Daniel Jones misses times. Maybe it's Drew Luck. But still, you know, they'll dress and they'll have an opportunity to get some level of NFL experience. And I think that would benefit the team most long term, because then you have your stud wide receiver and you have a quarterback who's familiar with the system a year from now.
Yeah, the more we go, you know, year to year here, it just seems like these quarterbacks that come in, they start right away, Dan, for these bad teams that are picking high in the draft, right? They put these rookie quarterbacks in right away. It doesn't go so well. Usually there's coaching changes or offensive coordinator changes, right? That hurts that player more, and you just see these guys completely fall off, right? Yeah.
And then that's almost the guarantee. That's the other thing too. That's almost the guarantee with these Giants. Whatever happens with Daboll and Shane aside, the bottom line is that Mike Kafka is not going to be here a year from now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's just not. He's not going to be. He's whether he gets a head coaching job or not. He's not going to return to the Giants. He is a lame duck offensive coordinator at this point. So there will be that change next year too, which is another reason why it would benefit, you know, whatever quarterback it is that they draft, assuming they do draft one, that they do sit anyway. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, the vast majority of this offense is now going to be Brian, has been Brian Daboll's, but there is going to be some level of change when Kafka goes too. So you don't want that first-year quarterback learning a specific system and then having to change, even if it's mild change, a year from now, because that, you know, like you just said, that very rarely benefits him. It's been one of the detriments and downfalls of Daniel Jones is the constant turnover. And we've seen that across the league with other quarterbacks too. And that's also something that people need to take into account. Whether it's a first round quarterback or a second round quarterback, these teams in recent years are missing way, way more than they're hitting. So again, how much do you want to invest in a rookie quarterback when it's basically a coin flip?
Yeah, exactly. I just think the best scenario is for a rookie quarterback these days, even guys picked high in the draft, is like when you get a guy that can come in, have a stable organization, stable coaching staff. So even if it's, you know, in the Giants case, at least Daboll, there's consistency there. As long as he's around, I think it would really benefit a rookie quarterback, Dan. Stability, sit a year behind a veteran, and then work your way in. You know, I keep bringing up the Jordan Love thing, but like, I really think there's something to that. Like, the guy comes in, he sits, he's in a stable organization, and then he's ready to go. And you make that succession, you know, now you move on from Daniel Jones with an actual plan. And that's what I'm pulling for here, you know, and I think one of these quarterbacks will fall. And you have this pick in on day two. Where are the Giants pick? I'm just going to look it up really quick. 47 overall. Yeah. That was the pick from Seattle, right? 47 overall. There's going to be a quarterback. If you want to take them with that pick, Dan, there's going to be a good quarterback available. I just have a gut feeling. I don't think all these guys are going to get picked in the first round. I just think we'll talk ourselves into that because we're all so excited about the draft and the court. We all get horned up over the quarterbacks, but one of these guys is going to slip, right? Could be Penix. That could be the guy. And I would love that for the Giants. Oh my gosh, if we could just put Penix on the bench, let him kind of learn the system with Daboll, work with Daboll. You still got Daniel Jones as your quarterback for a year or two or three, whatever you want it to be, depending on what happens with the contract. Like, I don't know. That would be my ideal situation.
I don't want it to be Bo Nix. I'll throw that out.
Yeah, no, me either. I hate him too, and he'll end up being the best quarterback in the draft class, obviously.
He might, but I wouldn't bet on that. I really genuinely wouldn't bet on that. He was set up to really, you know, succeed at Oregon, and obviously he played well. But, you know, as a guy who watches Auburn football regularly, I'll tell you right now, he does not have the clutch gene in him. He just doesn't have it. He just doesn't have it. And I don't know if that's something that they could teach into him at the NFL level. Maybe it is. But I don't think that he's going to be the guy. And more specifically, I don't think that the trouble he's likely to face with the Giants and their continuing to struggle offensive line is necessarily beneficial for him or will lead to any type of success. Maybe another team. But he strikes me as a guy that the Giants will ruin in a really quick manner.
Yeah, it does feel that way, doesn't it? But again, because we all hate Bo Nix, he'll end up being the best quarterback out of this entire class. That's just how football works. You know what I mean? Like, we just don't know. And that's what makes draft talk so fun. But yeah, let's kind of circle back to some of the offseason moves the Giants made, Dan. We haven't talked about this yet on the podcast. So they made the trade for Brian Burns. You want to give us your take on the Burns trade? They traded future capital for Burns and gave him the bag.
Yeah, not right? much.
Yeah.
Not much.
No, not much for a player of his caliber. And they gave him the bag of money. So I'm sure Saquon Barkley saw that on his way to Philly and was like, oh, yeah, that's great. You know what I mean? But Brian Burns.
Positions.
Yeah, absolutely. Positions, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, Saquon needs to learn how to be a defensive end. But Brian Burns is a Giant. What do you think?
I love the trade. Listen, like when you could give up little amount of draft capital like that, but get an absolute guarantee in return, you've already won. Because again, like we just said about the quarterbacks, and it really it applies to almost every position. It's kind of a crapshoot. You don't know if these people are going to pan out. See Kadarius Toney, for example. So you don't know what you're going to get. So when you can get a guaranteed return like they did with Brian Birds, it's a win. Now, obviously, they had to pay a premium price for that to happen after the fact in terms of his contract, and that was a significant contract that he was given. But the Giants have always had foundational success when their pass rush and their defense is at the top of the game. And for the past 2 years, if you've been listening to this podcast, you'll know that Ryan and I have been repeatedly saying they need someone to create organic pressure. Having to rely constantly on the blitz is not beneficial to this team. And although Wink made it work at times, they still desperately need that organic pass rush. And while you're not able to rely on Aziz Ojulari, you know, for a multitude of reasons, some not always necessarily his fault, they needed something else alongside of Kayvon Thibodeau. And Brian Burns's presence is not only going to boost the defense as a whole, but more specifically, it's going to make Dexter Lawrence and Kayvon Thibodeau that much better. So there's more to it than just whatever production it is that Brian Burns brings to the table. He's the kind of guy whose presence is going to free up those around him, and the entire defense is going to play better because of it. And if they don't have to rely on those secondary blitzes, the coverage for the team is going to get better despite, you know, some of the lacking bodies that they have in the secondary, which again is something that they need to address this offseason, whether it's through, you know, remaining free agents or the draft. They do need to beef that up. But again, Burns's presence alone is going to help that.
Well, Dan, if they can't generate organic pressure with this front they're building for this 2024 season, then fire everyone. You know what I mean? Like there should be organic pressure in 2024. I would say so with the Brian Burns coming, you know, again, like you just said, lining up opposite a Kayvon Thibodeau and now Aziz Ojulari.
With Dexter Lawrence in the middle.
Yeah, with Dexter in the middle and you still have Aziz Ojulari to like rotate in, or you could even put him on the field with those guys in some packages, right? Yeah. Like it'll be, you could do it. I just feel like it makes sense. It's a perfect... It's a perfect
move.
I'll
tell you what, though. They need more.
Yeah.
I firmly believe they need more pass rush. Mm-hmm. You can never have too many pass rushers. That's been the Giants' key to success throughout their entire existence, and it will continue to be their key to success moving forward. So that's also why I said I wouldn't be entirely shocked if they landed a pass rusher in round one. I think that's kind of a dark horse potential. I don't necessarily believe that's the way they're going to go, but they are going to add another pass rusher at this point. And hopefully that rotation will really, really benefit the rest of the defense. You got Bobby Okereke coming back after, you know, a career best season for him in the middle. So they should be strong as far as their front seven goes, but they definitely need to work on that secondary a bit.
Yeah. Secondary's still young, right? Young at least on the corners. They're young, but you know, got a year under their belt now. So the defense is taking shape. Like, you know, the offseason Dan played out, I was like, man, I'm feeling really good about the defense. It makes sense adding Brian Burns to this mix. Like that's gonna help things. But then you're watching, it's like, okay, Saquon Barkley is gone. He goes to Philly. The Giants signed Devin Singletary, who I've always liked Singletary. He was a former Buffalo Bill. Again, it's the Buffalo Bills. You know, we're always going after these former Bills, but you know, he had a good little season for Houston last year. We could talk about Singletary. The other big moves, I guess, were they added some offensive line help, which no one's going to be upset about, right? But, you know, a guard, John Runyon, he's been a solid starter for the Packers the past few years. Aaron Stinney, same deal. I think Runyon and Stinney, Dan, they could be your starting guards day one for the Giants. Is that what you're expecting?
No, I don't think. I don't think so. Stinney's going to be the starter. I think Runyon's going to be the starter, but I'm pretty convinced that the Giants are going to run Evan Neal back out there at right tackle. Obviously, Andrew Thomas at left tackle. So Stinney's going to be more of a backup, which obviously they needed. Like we talked about that at length last year, they were very thin at guard in particular. But it's Jermaine Illuminor. Like he'll have the chance to compete at right tackle throughout training camp, but ultimately I think they're gonna give that job, give Evan Neal one last chance. So I think he'll be the other starting guard. Whether or not he remains there throughout the entire season, I don't know. But I do think that he's going to earn the other guard spot across from Runyon. Whether that's on the left or the right, I mean, we'll see. But I think that's how it's going to shape up as far as the offensive line going into week one.
That's interesting. I thought Illuminor would be more of like tackle depth, but I guess he's played all over the place. He's been kind of a journeyman, right? He started his career with the Patriots, played for, I'm a Patriots fan, and I remember him not lasting very long with the Patriots. He wasn't very good. And then he was a practice squad guy, bounced around a little bit, but I think maybe he figured it out. He had a couple decent years with the Raiders, Dan. So maybe Illuminor, maybe that's a sneaky little signing for the Giants, but yeah. Go ahead.
And he's obviously got some familiarity with the position coach who also came over from the Raiders. So
good point.
There is, some meshing that happens there. And let me tell you, just from a pure unrelated to football standpoint, Giants fans are going to love him because that dude is more amped up about being a Giant than I have ever seen a free agent probably in my entire life be amped up about being a Giant. He is loving the idea of putting on an NY helmet.
Love it. Oh, I love that. So that's a great point with the new offensive line coach too, coming from the Raiders. This is why I need you, Dan. I need you. But so, you know, you're just looking at it, it's like, okay, they made some moves on the offensive line. Great. You know, they added some, I guess, could you call it wide receiver depth? Isaiah McKenzie and Gunnar Olszewski.
I think that was more about special teams. Yeah, I think that was more.
I will say this, Isaiah McKenzie, another former Bill. Isaiah McKenzie, yeah. I like him. He's a good little player. He can actually give you a little something at wide receiver if you need him. Gunnar Olszewski, get the hell out of here. I'm not rooting for him to make the team. He is a fumble on a punt return in a key situation waiting to happen, Dan. I want nothing to do with Gunnar Olszewski, another former Patriot, by the way.
I thought he did a good job for the team last year.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. Anywho, hopefully he doesn't make the team.
He certainly stabilized, you know, the position after Eric Gray. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you want to talk about a fumble waiting to happen. And again, that's not a knock on Eric Gray. We talked about it
Richie
last
James
year.
A couple of years ago.
Right. Listen, Gray was being used in a position that he wasn't familiar with and clearly not comfortable. So I don't put his struggles on him for that. That was a coaching staff issue, but Gunnar did come in and really kind of stabilize that whole thing.
Yeah, he has his moments, but again, you know, when he has a key, when the Giants are, you know, actually doing better than people think, Dan, and we have some meaningful football and he makes a key fumble, I'm going to remind you of this conversation that we had on April 4th. No, it's fine. I'm just not a fan of Gunnar Olszewski, but mostly because he doesn't give you anything as a receiver. He just can't figure that thing out. Maybe Dayball's the guy that can help him there. But it's just like you look at the moves the Giants made. Burns is the headliner, along with losing Saquon Barkley. You made these moves on the offensive line. You help out your return game a little bit, your special teams, fine. But I think as a Giants fan, you have to be like, okay, we signed Drew Locke, as you mentioned earlier. We can't not mention that, Dan, right? So you come out of free agency, and I think you hit on this earlier in the program. It's like that was – all right, I love the Brian Burns move. Can't rip that, but like, at what point do we help the offense? You know what I mean? Like, that's where I keep coming back to, and that's kind of the feeling I had coming out of the offseason. Now, I don't want to rip the Giants too bad because again, it's early April. We still have the draft, and they can address some of these things. But I think you make these big moves on the defense, and you lose a Saquon Barkley, and it's like, okay, like this isn't doing it for me. You know, as a fan, we need to score points. We need to be more competitive on offense. And that's what I'm kind of hungry for here going as we head towards the draft, Dan. And it was really the offseason and the free agency period that kind of fueled that for me.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think that the offensive linemen that they added were kind of mid-tier. I don't think any of them is really going to blow you away.
Agreed.
But the Giants have been so far low-tier that we'll take mid-tier. You know what I mean? Like, what can this offense possibly do with mid-tier? I'd love to find out. So hopefully Evan Neal rebounds and the guards play average football. Like, if they play above average football, great. Then that's just gravy. But let's just have an average offensive line, you know, not one of the, you know, worst in NFL history. So let's start there and hope that maybe they at least partially solve some of those issues. And that will obviously help the running game. And, you know, you talk about Saquon, you know, leaving for the Eagles, and that's kind of its own you know, little micro story or more than micro story.
He was ready.
Yeah. So I'm kind of indifferent about that loss because as much as I like Saquon Barkley, let's be realistic about who Saquon Barkley is, especially over the last several years. With the exception of his one healthy campaign, he's a guy who's going to miss time. And generally, you know, because we always talk about, and it's funny that I see these comments about Daniel Jones and the need to replace him because he's so injury prone. But then that same thought process is never applied to Saquon Barkley, who's as equally injury prone as Daniel Jones is, if not more. So with Singletary, you get a guy who's going to come in and he doesn't, knock on wood, he doesn't miss time. And I think that's a huge bonus right away because he has that advantage over Saquon Barkley. He's going to play 17 games. So right away, you get an improvement from an availability standpoint. From a production standpoint, you know, this is a guy who's, you know, basically, you know, he fell short his first 2 years, but he's basically a guy that's had 1,000 or 1,100 scrimmage yards every single season. And, you know, when Barkley's healthy and on top of his game, he's going to give you a lot more than that. But again, that's where the availability comes in. So from a sheer production standpoint, the fall off is not going to be as significant as some people are making it out to be. You know, you're not going to get those massive rushing totals, you know, but again, when you look at things down the line, when the season's all said and done and Barkley has missed five games and he's put up, you know, 1,250 yards and you've got Singletary's played 17 games and he's got 1,100 yards, how much did you really lose? Beyond that, people also need to remember who else Saquon Barkley is. He's a guy who wants to pride himself as a receiver and at times is a solid receiver, but he also drops an astronomical amount of passes for the running back. And clutch situations. I mean, if you think back on it, a lot of his drops have come in really important situations. So you're not going to have that same problem with Singletary. He tends not to drop as many passes as Saquon Barkley does. He may not be as prolific as a wide receiver as Saquon Barkley has been, but he's certainly capable of it and can produce in that role. And then on the ground, Saquon Barkley is sort of a home run or bust kind of guy. You're always going to get one or two monster plays from him a game, and that's great. But you're trying to grind clock down. You're trying to eat up small amount of yardage. You're not going to have a guy that's going to run up the back of his offensive lineman, lose 2 yards, gain 1 yard, gain 3 yards, and then bust off a 47-yard run. You're going to get a guy who is going to rush the ball for 4 yards, 5 yards, 4 yards, 10 yards. And there's a benefit to that consistency that the Giants have lacked with Saquon Barkley. So all told, at the end of the season, are you going to have that massive home run threat that other teams are honing in on every single play? No. But you're going to have a guy who is consistent on every single run, who plays every single game, and who can produce through the air as well. So you give up the home run threat, but you gain much more consistency, and I think that will benefit the offense.
Yeah, you're right, Dan. We talked earlier, and you said you weren't going to be that mean to Saquon. I don't think you were. You weren't too mean to him. But I do like Singletary. I think he's a good back. The only thing I worry about, and it does kind of tie into some of the things you were saying about him being available for the 17 games, the one thing I wonder with Singletary is he's never really been the guy like Saquon, like the
and
guy
he's not going to be. Okay. He's not going to be this year either.
Okay,
they're going to go rotation. That's a Shane and Daboll staple. That's what they did in Buffalo. It was a it was a running back by committee rotation.
Zach Moss, yep, Zach Moss is Singletary.
Exactly. So I 100% believe that Singletary is going to have the top role of the available backs, but he is not going to be a bell cow guy for the Giants. So again, that decreases his injury risk, which is a great thing. But yeah, then you're not going to have to rely on him to be that Saquon Barkley. They are going to have a rotation. And I think that's sort of why not just because they didn't want to pay for a running back. They didn't, obviously.
Clearly.
It's not a position that they were going to invest in heavily. Same with safety. But I think beyond that, they kind of wanted to go back to what they're comfortable with in terms of personnel, and that's a running back by committee.
So that's great. You answered my question. I was going to say Singletary doesn't. He's never been like the bell cow, but you don't see that. You don't see that continuing. No. He did kind of take the job from who was the kid in Houston. Damian Pierce, the young running back, they wanted him to be the guy, and Singletary kind of took it from him, which is a good sign. And I do like the player. So, and yeah, the Giants did not want to pay for that position, clearly. I mean, Saquon got, what, $31 million guaranteed?
Yeah,
the
Eagles. Yeah,
$31 million guaranteed for the Eagles. The Giants signed Singletary for the same amount of years for $9.5 million in guarantees. So it's a big that's a big difference. I'm sure the Giants are
happy.
And
they
need that.
They needed that. Yeah, they needed that money to spend it on other positions. And
yep.
I personally, I would say if I had to choose between, you know, paying Saquon Barkley and paying Xavier McKinney, obviously the Giants didn't pay either of them. Still, if I could have gone back and made that choice, I would have paid it for Xavier McKinney over Barkley anyway.
Yep. You've been consistent with that. Well, they gave it to Brian Burns. So what are you going to do?
Yeah. Hey, there you go. Yeah,
there it is.
I'm a little concerned about the secondary. I don't think that you can continue to cycle these safeties in and out the way that they're doing it. I mean, they lost Julian Love two seasons ago, and obviously Jason Pinnock came in and played well. But now they lost, you know, Xavier McKinney, and, you know, there are a couple guys that are there, Dane Belton. They, you know, they brought in some players. I don't know if they're going to be able to play to the same level as McKinney, but one thing I can guarantee you that they're not going to do, and they're not going to play every single defensive snap like he did. So in the past two seasons, they lost guys who were constantly on the field and team captains. And I know they don't view the safety position as a premium position, and they're not going to spend an astronomical amount of money there. But they lost as much off the field as they did on the field. And at some point or another, I'm afraid that's going to catch up to the Giants in terms of their roster building.
Yep. No, that's clearly, it would feel right now that they're going very young in the secondary across the board, which is, you know, it's a little bit of a gamble. Sometimes it pays off, but that could be a gamble as well. So yeah, that's an interesting note. Just to wrap it up, Dan, John Mara made some comments. We usually cover his stuff, but we had just so much to get to on this show that we haven't really covered it much. But maybe you could give me a quick thought on Mara's comments at the annual NFL meetings in the offseason. He talked about Daniel Jones. The thing that stuck out to me most was he did not hold back any punches about the offensive line play. He basically like said, we're holding the coaching staff accountable for this. We are going to fix this. And he's hell bent on that. And just going back to your point, like, do I like John Runyon? He comes from the Green Bay Packers, seems like a solid guy. Absolutely. I like John Runyon. Do I expect him to be the best guard in football? No. You know what I mean? Like, the Packers let him go because they were grooming a young guy to take his place. And he was splitting reps with the young guy at the end of the season last year. And that's just, you know, the Packers were fine letting John Runyon go. Am I expecting him to come in and dominate? No. Aaron Stinney, Jermaine Illuminor, do I think they're going to fix all your problems? No. So if the Giants like surprise us with picking a Joe Alt in the draft, Dan, I wouldn't be that surprised, because it feels like the owner's putting a little bit of pressure on him to fix that offensive line. You know what I mean?
Well, so it's such a long-standing problem. I think every Giants fan or every analyst, anybody who watches the Giants, anybody who scouts the Giants or does film breakdown for the Giants, can feel what John Mara is feeling. You know, this offensive line has been a disaster for more than a decade at this point. Like, this is embarrassing, because not only has it not gotten better, it has regularly gotten worse. You know, they were arguably one of the worst offensive lines in the history of football last year. So,
yes,
you know, it's easy. Like, who can succeed with that? You know, forget about Daniel Jones. That had a negative impact on Saquon Barkley. That has a negative impact on the wide receivers. It has a negative impact on the tight ends. It has a negative impact on the play calling because of the personnel packages that you have to put on the field to make up for the bad offensive line. You want to talk about why the Giants have a lack of explosive plays? Fine. You want Daniel Jones to shoulder that? Whatever. But the reality of the situation is it doesn't fall all on the quarterback. It doesn't fall all on the wide receivers. It doesn't fall all on the offensive coordinator. It falls very much on the offensive line that continues to hold this offense back in almost every single form and facet. So it's easy to understand why John Mara has grown so publicly frustrated with this. And he doesn't usually make statements like that, you know. But, you know, even when Eli Manning, his career came to an end, you might remember that John Mara said, "We wasted his final years," and a large product of that was a result of the poor offensive line. And you saw that again last year. And that's, you know, we still don't know what Daniel Jones is for this reason. And even when Tyrod Taylor and Tommy DeVito came in, they may have had bits of success here and there, but at the end of the day, they all got injured because of poor offensive line play. Their production was hindered because of poor offensive line play. So it's easy to understand why Mara has grown remarkably frustrated with this. And frankly, I feel like he really toned down what he actually feels like when it comes to the offensive line.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like, you know, some of the big things that came out of that interview or that press conference, whatever you want to call it, he did support Daniel Jones, and he basically said, look, we can't block, so I'm not going to put that on Daniel. I think the Daniel Jones we saw in 2022 when we made the playoffs is the real guy. That's pretty much what he said. But it came back to the offensive line. Then he basically said he called the offensive line ridiculous. He says he expects it to be, quote, a hell of a lot better this year. He said it's certainly a priority going into this offseason. Mm-hmm. So they're not done at the offensive line either, right, Dan? Because, you know,
No way.
John Runyon and Aaron Stinney and Jermaine or Luminor, fine, good depth pieces. Maybe a couple of those guys will end up starting for you. They're not solving all your problems, though, right? They can't be done. So I just thought that was my big takeaway.
One of the biggest, and one of the biggest risks is they're running it back with Evan Neal. Like, I understand why. They invested heavily in this guy.
I kind of think you have to.
He's a big body. He's a guy who should be able to play much better than he's played. But if he doesn't, this team will again find themselves in serious, serious trouble. And I think it's almost a guarantee that at some point in the draft, again, assuming they don't trade all their assets to move up for a quarterback who's going to sit for a year, you know, they're going to use one of those assets on an offensive lineman, and potentially a good one. There are a lot of good offensive linemen that could be had in the middle rounds of this draft, and I think they're going to have to target one of them.
That's it. And circling back to the draft, Dan, after about an hour of chatter, we have no idea what they're going to do, right? That's the consensus. We just have no freaking clue, and that's what makes
draft day so much fun. Narrow it, right. You can narrow it down to a couple positions, but you can't narrow it down to a player.
Yep. There it is. So how you feel, Dan? Did we cover it? We had a lot. We hadn't chatted on here since the new coaching staff was assembled. Yeah. So it's been a while. Do you feel we got everything? Is there anything else with the Giants you wanted to get off your chest, or you think we covered it all?
Oh, I'm sure there are probably some things, but nothing comes to mind right now. Plus, nobody will want to hear it anyway.
It's been a while.
It's draft time, and that's all anybody's interested in at this point is draft. So thankfully, we're on the path to the draft, and a lot of these questions are going to be answered soon. I unfortunately envision that there's going to be a lot of remote control throwing from Giants fans, because I don't think they're going to get that quarterback that they want in the first round.
Agreed.
And that's going to, you know, piss some people off. But I think Joe Shane, if he doesn't do that and he grabs a stud wide receiver, you know, he gets a mid-round offensive lineman, a mid-round bruising running back, you know, maybe a safety or cornerback somewhere in the draft. I think, you know, that will be positive overall for this team. And then maybe they, you know, land one of those quarterbacks in round two, and that'll solve some of the remote control throwing issues that are undoubtedly going to plague the homes of Giants fans.
What would be an offseason without remote control throwing? You know what I mean?
Right.
Or a Giants season.
I can't wait to hear how many people are going to quit on the team and never watch them again when they don't draft a quarterback in round one.
Yeah. We'll see about that. But again, for Dan Benton, I'm Ryan O'Leary. Thanks for joining us as always. We'll catch you next time.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.